I want you to go ahead and open to the Gospel of Luke, chapter number 2, where we are going to begin in verse number 6, once we're ready to actually look at the text itself. First, let me remind you of the background that we've been working on, and that is, it is my belief that Jesus was born at Bethlehem during the latter portion of the census of Augustus Caesar that began in the summer of 8 BC. And so I think that Jesus was conceived in 8 BC and born in 7 BC. Furthermore, I think that he was born in the second Jewish month, which is 9 months forward from the sixth Jewish month that I believe Luke was referring to when he said that the angel Gabriel came to her in the month, the sixth one. And today, we are going to add a little bit more historical background from Christian sources that I believe really pins it down that this is the authentic birth chronology for Jesus. So let's go ahead and read what we have in the text before us, and then we'll eventually look at some of these historical sources. So verse number 6 of Luke 2 says, while they were there, meaning in Bethlehem, while they were making sure that they became part of the registration of Augustus Caesar, the time came for her to give birth. She gave birth to her firstborn son, wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. Well, swaddling was something very common for the Middle Eastern peoples of this time period. Instead of just simply putting a diaper on the baby, they bundled the baby completely up. The process seems to have been something like this. When the baby was born, they would clean them off and wash them. And then in some traditions, apparently, they would rub them down with salt. And then they would swaddle them up and bind their arms even in place. It is thought that perhaps what they were trying to do was simulate the way the baby had been kind of swaddled inside the mother's womb these last 9 months, and so kind of give the baby a chance to transition into this new life. And of course, whenever the baby needed change, they would take the swaddling off, clean the baby up, swaddle them back up again. So that's the description that we see here in our text. Now, the baby was laid in a manger. In our modern Western Christian minds, we see a little A-frame sort of wood contraption with a bunch of hay in it. And it's possible that that might have been what Luke was referring to, but it's just as possible that the word is referring to a feeding trough or a water trough that's been carved out of stone. When you travel around the different ancient sites in Egypt, you see a lot of these stone watering or feeding troughs because it was an easy use of native product. And plus, it didn't disappear and didn't deteriorate over time. It weathered well. So my guess is that more than likely the picture we should have is swaddled baby Jesus, maybe on some soft things inside one of these little stone carved out water or feeding boxes. Now, the reason that they were in a place where animals were often found is because there was no place for them in the inn. Now, this inn is something that existed across the Middle East for travelers. It would have a building that some people could pay to stay in, yes, but it also had like a wall around it that allowed other cheaper places to camp, almost like a KOA, I suppose, campground, where you could camp inside the security of this wall, and you'd have access to toilet facilities and water and cooking facilities. Apparently, the inn that was at Bethlehem was full up, completely packed. And the story that I grew up with as a kid in the church was that it was packed because everybody was showing up there to register for the census. As an adult student of the world, I do not see that as being the more likely explanation as to why the place was packed out. Because the census seems to have taken place over a period of time, and therefore people could come whenever it was convenient and provide their details of their employment and their expected income over the next year. So that doesn't, I think, explain it by itself. In my recent years of study, I have come to believe that there's at least a couple of more reasons why the inn might have been overflowing with visitors to the area. One of them is rather interesting in the fact that every 5 years at Jerusalem, Herod put on what I refer to as the Augustus Games. It started whenever Augustus became the emperor of the empire, and Herod decided that every 5 years, when Augustus kind of re-upped his 5 years of rule, that Herod would put on sporting contests and demonstrations and these poetry and musical and dramatic contests. We know that he actually built amphitheater and theater and a hippodrome at Jerusalem, brand new buildings, in order to hold these first Augustus Games. And he invited people from all over the known world to come in and to compete in these various venues and to come and be spectators. And so Jerusalem, every 5 years, was kind of the place to go in the empire to see these spectacles and to be impressed by the latest drama or the latest poetry or singing group. Jerusalem would have been overflowing with visitors during the Augustus Games. And then down on the coast, every 5 years in the same cycle, apparently, he had the Kaiser Games, the Caesar Games, in honor, again, of his friend, the emperor. And so he would have the same things going on down at Caesarea. Well, guess what? The year 7 BC is the scheduled year for both the Augustus Games at Jerusalem and the Kaiser Games at Caesarea. And so Judea would have been overrun by tons and tons of visitors from around the known world during this time. And so a lot of the inns would have been packed out. I believe that these games would have been scheduled for the summertime, but people would have started arriving well before any of the games began. So if Jesus is born, as I suspect, in the second Jewish month, which coincides with basically about May, so later spring, then this might explain why the inn at Jerusalem, which is only at the inn at Bethlehem, which is only about 4 miles from Jerusalem, might have been full up with those that were trying to get in to Jerusalem to see some of the games. Now, the other thing that we know is this. All Jewish men of adult age, in good health, living inside the boundaries of the Promised Land, were expected to present themselves at Jerusalem, at the temple, for Passover, which happens in the early spring, Pentecost, which happens at the end of spring, and Tabernacles, which happens at the end of summer, right before you go into fall. So if Jesus was in fact born in the second month of the Jewish year, then Pentecost always happened in the first week of the third month. And so people would have been coming to Jerusalem to participate in Pentecost. And you always went a little bit early in order to make sure you were ceremonially clean and to get a good place to stay. And Bethlehem was commuting distance from Jerusalem. And so that might be another reason for Bethlehem's inn to be completely chock-a-block with people and no room for a little poor couple coming down out of Galilee. All right, so now let's talk about the timing of Jesus' birth in accordance with early Christian writings. The earliest reference in non-biblical New Testament, Christian writings comes from Clement of Alexandria, the big city in Egypt. It's in his writing called Stromata, which is Latin for miscellaneous things. This document was written right around AD 200, so not a long time after the apostolic era. And it's the earliest reference to a date, a specific calendar date for Jesus' birth. And he basically says that some Egyptian Christians that he knew of were convinced that Jesus had been born on either the 24th or the 25th day of Pharmanuti, which is the Egyptian eighth month of the year, or on the 25th day of Pachons, which is the next month, the ninth Egyptian month. Now, instantly, you see that the number 25 is attached to Jesus' birth. And this is from the year 200 AD. Okay? So this is the earliest reference to the 25th day of a month being associated with Jesus' birth. Now, in the time of Jesus being born that we've been talking about, the eighth Egyptian month would basically be mid-April, and the 25th day of the ninth Egyptian month would have been mid-May. And guess what? That is exactly where we would find the birth of Jesus if he had been conceived in the sixth Jewish month. Because you see, the ninth Egyptian month is equivalent to the second Jewish month when counted from the spring. And so, again, if Jesus were born on the 25th day of the second Jewish month, that means he was born within about a week before Pentecost of that particular year. And that would be a good explanation, again, as to why the inn was full up. Now, coming from this earliest specific date, we go to another early Christian document that specifies the date of Jesus' birth. And this document is called the Constitutions of the Holy Apostles. It's written after the Stromata, so after 200, but it has to date from before the 6th century AD, so before the 500s. And this document is a rule book for the Christians of this period, saying that you have to do your special worship days on these particular days and in this particular way. And so it says that the birthday of Christ is to be celebrated on the 25th day of the ninth month. Now, when you look at this document, you are presuming that they're talking about the ninth Jewish month when counted from the spring. Now, we already know, because we've been just reading from the Stromata before that, that it's actually the ninth Egyptian month, counting from the fall. So that means it should be actually the ninth Jewish month counted from the fall, which puts it into the second Jewish month counted from the spring and the 25th day of that month. So this is the way, this is the place that I can guarantee you that the error crept in that pushed Jesus' birthday into the winter. Because you know what happens if you look at the ninth Jewish month, the 25th day of the ninth Jewish month, counted from the spring? The ninth Jewish month typically falls in December, especially the 25th day of that month. And so this is, I believe, how we ended up with the 25th day of December being counted as the birth date of Jesus. It's just an error in misunderstanding Jewish calendars and Egyptian calendars, because it was typical for Gentiles, whenever they were hearing about dates on Jewish months, to just move that numbered day into whichever month was equivalent to it. So if the 25th day of the ninth Jewish month happens during the month of December, you just simply say it happened on the 25th day of December. And so that, folks, is the way, more than likely, that we ended up with the incorrect 25th day of December as being the birth date for Jesus. Now, some people get all bent out of shape every single year and talk about how the 25th day of December was a pagan holiday called Saturnalia, and that this is the reason we shouldn't be celebrating it. Well, there's a big problem with that. Saturnalia did happen in December amongst the Roman people, but it never happened on the 25th. It was actually associated with the winter solstice around the 21st to the 22nd. Later, they expanded it, I think, to include the 23rd. But it was never, ever, at any time on the 25th. So you can throw that idea out the window. The other thing that people make claims about all the time is that Emperor Constantine was this horrible person that decided to take Roman pagan things and Christianize them. And so what he did was he took the birthday of the sun that was on the 25th day of December and made it into the birthday of Jesus. Well, here's some big problems with that. We already know that the 25th day was in, the 25th day associated with Jesus' birth was already in Christian documents long before Constantine was ever born. A couple of hundred years before Constantine, at least 100 years before Constantine was born. And so that can't be an explanation. The other thing is, it's hard to do, I know, but it can be done. You can go back and you can check all the documentation of the Roman Empire and before. And there is never any ancient authentic reference to the birthday of the sun happening on the 25th day of December. I've looked for it. It's not there. The first time it ever gets associated with the birthday of the sun is under Constantine. And I don't think Constantine was referencing the sun god of the ancient Romans. You know what I think he was referencing? Something we've already talked about. The book of Malachi. Do you remember the passage that we were reading there whenever we were talking about the prophecies and the celebration of Zacharias, and how in the book of Malachi, chapter number 4, verse number 2, it says that the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in his wings. And this is a clear messianic passage. And so the early Christians grabbed hold of that, and they talked about Jesus being the Son of Righteousness, rising with healing in his wings. And it wouldn't be one tiny bit surprising for them to talk about the 25th day of what they thought was December being the birthday of the Son of Righteousness. And so I think that's exactly how all of these things got started and how they ended up being misconstrued. So bottom line, my encouragement to you is don't get bent out of shape by all of these false accusations of paganism being associated with the celebration of Jesus' birth in December. I think it is accidental that it happens then, but I think the point should not be lost. We are celebrating the arrival of the Son of Righteousness, who is coming to save us from our sins, just as the text says. I don't think that we'll ever be able to correct the celebration to its springtime authentic date, but I'm not worried about it. We've all known probably of people who had wrong birthdays that suddenly they're told what the authentic birthday is. And what generally happens is not changing of their birthday celebration, but simply an acknowledgement that a mistake was made. And if anything, we'll just celebrate both dates. And so, folks, when spring rolls around every year, right around Pentecost, I think it'd be a great thing for you to think about Jesus being actually born at that time of year. But every year, when 25 December rolls around, I guarantee you I will be gearing up to celebrate all of the stories of Jesus' birth, because we know the world is listening and open to the story that time of year, every year. And you got to strike while the iron is hot, all right? Anybody that wants to debate with me about it or ask questions or get some clarifications and things, please feel free to contact me. Be polite. If you want to debate, that's fine. We can debate politely. But my contact information is what it's always been, thomasjshort@comcast.net. All right, so let's move on to another part of the story that shows that it definitely wasn't in the winter. And so that's Luke chapter 2, verse number 8. In the same region, so Bethlehem, there were shepherds out in the field keeping watch over their flock by night. Shepherds don't do that in the winter. Shepherds bring their sheep undercover at sunset and keep them in the fold all night long during the cold, and generally in Israel around Bethlehem, wet and rainy winter months of the month of December. So what's being described here is much better applied to the springtime, especially during the lambing time that happens between Passover and Pentecost. When the shepherds are watching their pregnant sheep or their recently the sheep that have recently given birth to new lambs, they're keeping watch over them at night to make sure everything's well with them. And so that's the picture I have in mind here for being the authentic Christmas story. And so here they are, it's all dark, and an angel of He Who Is appeared to them. The glory of He Who Is shone around them, and they were filled with fear. And wouldn't you be as well? Imagine yourself being a shepherd. You're out there in the quiet of the night, might be singing to the sheep as you're trying to stay awake because you're on night watch, keeping an eye on the perimeters of the flock to make sure that no wild animals come up, take any of those young lambs that have been recently born. And then suddenly a blinding presence appears before your eyes. And there's this radiant glory coming from this being. And you know instantly, this is supernatural. This is a divine being. This is an angelic being. And it scares you out of your mind. And no doubt you fall on your face. And then the angel says what angels so often say when they disrupt people's lives. Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which shall be to all the people.